Base Tavis, 28th of December, Rabbi Rafi Garson, Hanukkah Secrets, Jewish Survival and the Dreidel.
Okay, good morning everyone. Hanukkah. Okay, so in the few minutes we have today, on the last night of Hanukkah, a very special day, let's try and learn some ideas to do with this very special chag. And perhaps be inspired together. So just as an aside, we know that there are many different remazim, very many different secrets and allusions to Hanukkah that we find in various places. One came to my door in the form of a mishulach a few years ago from Sanford Hill, a man by the name of Mr. Weiss. He told me that the gematria of the word Vayeshev, Parashas Vayeshev, which usually falls out the week of Hanukkah as it did this week, has the gematria of 318. Which is Shin Yud Chet, which stands for Shmona Yimei Chanukah. Which I thought was pretty authentic. There's another lovely one before we begin. The Rav Yaakov Orbach, I'm not sure if he was later Rosh Shlomo Zalmanov from Beit Began, I think he was a professor. He wrote an amazing sefer called Ma'or Shel Torah, which is actually out of print now, but I have it at home. And he says as follows, that if you count the amount of words that you say over Chanukah, you find an amazing thing. On the first night, you make the bracha of Lehadig Ner Chanukah. Svanim say Lehadig Ner Chanukah, and even if you say Ner Shel, he counts that as one word. So it's 13 words. The bracha of Shasan Nisim Lavotenu by Imam Ahem Bamazay also has 13 words. It's 26 times 8, gives you 26 times 8 is 208. And then on the first day, you say the bracha of Shechiyanu as well, which has 11 words. Total those together, you get 219. Haneiru Salar, if you count them, has 49 words. Said over 8 days gives you 392. If you make the maths, you get 611. But 611, we know it's the Gematria of Torah, which is essentially what the menorah represents, our recommitment to Yiddishkeit and to everything that is Torah. So let's begin in that vein. We have the Gemara that says in Shabbos, Taf Kaf Aleph, the famous Gemara of Mai Chanukah. What exactly is Hanukkah? And it goes on to explain what happened on the 25th of Kislev. And they came into the Heichal and they found the Pach Shemen. What's interesting is this whole section, for those who have learned the Gemara on Shabbat, comes after. The whole practical laws of the Zohar have already been explained in great detail. If we were writing the Gemara, it would have made much more sense to have organized the structure of the Gemara. The first introduce what the whole subject, the whole topic of Hanukkah is all about. And then only afterwards go ahead and explain all the halachot, all the various halachas that apply to Hanukkah. So Rabbi Leibel Lem, in one of his books, observes that for some mystical reason that is beyond us, we find that Jews around the world keep this rabbinic holiday with tenacious loyalty. We find in 1991, the JNF Jewish Population Survey found back then, that in 5.5 million Jews in America, there's more than 3.5 million who have no synagogue affiliation whatsoever, and yet more than 74% of American Jewry, however affiliated or non-affiliated, keep Hanukkah. So he said, perhaps tongue-in-cheek, that Gemara was prophesizing this for many, many years later. They have no idea why they're keeping it. They just light it because everyone does it. Only afterwards, after they've lit it, do they ask the question, my Hanukkah? Which perhaps what the Gemara is alluding to. So, is it a little bit more than just planting this memory of what once was in one's home? What else is there about this holiday that is so unique, that is so special, that is embedded into the consciousness of every single Jew, that we delight in seeing those small candles flickering in the window? What was the secret that enabled us to win back then, and does it apply now? So I want to share with you an insight that I saw in the Kol Yehuda, Rav Yehuda Sadka. For those that aren't aware, Rav Yehuda Sadka was the Rosh Shiva of Porat Yosef, the famous Sephardic Yeshiva across the plaza where the Kotel stands today. And he quotes the following Gemara, the very famous Gemara in Me'ilah, for those that did it in Daf Yomi last time. That's probably why people always say it's a famous Gemara. Anyway, the Gemara says like this, that it happened once, God's the second source on your sheet, Gazra Amachut Gezerah Shelo Yishmeru Tashabab Veshelo Yamulu Benehem Veshivalu El Nidot. Three-pronged Gezerah by the Romans. They couldn't keep Shabbat. They weren't allowed to give their children a bris. And their husbands had to be Boel Nidot, had to be with their wives while they were menstruating. So the Gemara explains that Halach Reuben ben Ishrobli v'siper kumi. So when he went ahead, and Rashi explains that he made himself look like a non-Jew by shaving his hair in a certain way. V'halach v'yeshav imahem. He went and sat amongst the Senate in the Roman court. V'yeshav imahem. He sat with them. Amar lehem, he said to Misha yesh le'eyov ya'ani o yashir. He says, a person has an enemy. Would you prepare those enemies to be wealthy or to be poor? So, Amru lo ya'ani, it's better they should be poor. Amar lehem, in ken lo yesu melacha b'Shabbat. So why are you making the Jews work on Shabbat? If they don't work on Shabbat, it's one less day, they're likely to become poorer. So Amr Tavit Amran, he said, you said correct. They went ahead and they annulled the decree. Then he said to them, a person has an enemy. Would you rather your enemy is weak or strong? He said, we'd rather have a weaker enemy. If that's the case, the Gemara says, why are you making not make a bris? Let them make a bris. Their bodies will become weaker. You have a weak enemy. The Gemara says, you're saying correctly. And they annulled the decree. And finally he said to them, would you rather have an enemy that is very, there's a lot of them, or you'd rather have a small enemy, small amount of enemy? So we'd rather have a small amount of enemy. If that's the case, why are you making them be with their wives when they're in either? If they're not with their wives, that's like they have less children, and therefore you have less people to deal with. So you said very correctly. Suddenly they realize something's not quite right. So they realize he was a Jew, and they reinstated the Gezeiros. The Gemara goes on to explain that they needed Rav Shimon Bar Yochai, who was Milumad Benisin, was someone who was a miracle worker, to actually go ahead and avert the decrees. So it's basically clear, says Rabbi Yehuda Sadka, that when the nations of the world institute decrees against our people, generally speaking, there's a rationale behind them. So there's some benefit that needs to be reaped by employing those decrees. So for example, he gives the classic case of Paro and Mitzrayim, that he was concerned. They're on box 3. Vayomer el amohine ben Eisar Abram Rav ve'atsumi menu. They're going to become greater than us. They're going to overpower us. So therefore, we're going to make them weak. We're going to press them now with saremisim, with taskmasters. So as long as there's something in there that's going to grant them success, so they'll issue all these decrees. They'll issue all these edicts. And if the Jews suffer along the way, then that's part and parcel. We don't really care about it. So in this particular case, what was their function? What was the greater good that was supposed to be coming out of these decrees? So the first edict was they can't keep Shabbos. Perhaps they couldn't understand the fact that Jews felt special, that they're chosen people, they have one day of rest, every Jewish family creating this royal atmosphere in their home every week. Then that knocked them up the wrong way. It says, we work day and night, there's no vacation for you either, you've got to work on Shabbat. Fine. No circumcision makes us look different from the rest of the world. We want you to assimilate. So therefore, if you look the same as us, you're more likely to become assimilated, and the Jews would be lost forever. That's a great thing. But that every husband should have intimate relations with his wife while the wives are menstruating. She'ivol nidol. What could they possibly have achieved from all of this? So Rav Sadka suggests that these decrees were decreed by the Romans well after the story of Hanukkah. Well after the story of Hanukkah, where the Greeks failed miserably. Because in the time of the Hanukkah story, the Greeks slaughtered the Jews for keeping Torah and keeping mitzvah, but it didn't crush their resolve and it didn't crush their spirit. Because Jews went to their deaths, if you read the Midrashim, you read the Meginat Hanukkah, they went to their deaths rather than transgress mitzvah of Hashem. Some became Hellenized, but not all of them. But the harsher the decrees, the harsher the Jews were in their stubbornness to their commitment. And the Jews won at the end of the day. So now many years later, the Romans are on the scene. So they begin to ponder, wherein lies the strength of this nation? The power and the fortitude of these people, a nation who doesn't sway in their commitment to their Torah. And they arrived at the conclusion that this unique entity known as Klal Yisrael, as Bnei Yisrael, have very solid foundations. Those foundations can't be cracked. And therefore, Jews, before they are even conceived, are considered kadosh mirechem, are considered holy from the womb, because the parents sanctify themselves with holiness before conception, the whole concept of nida and the counting, and until they get to the mikveh. This is the unique women's mitzvah. And that reality creates a child that's conceived with a neshama of tremendous spiritual sanctity, and that is beyond our physical understanding. So what happens is, when you have a child that is born under such circumstances, a child that is imbued with such kedusha, create super strong foundations that can never be broken. Just an aside, just remember now, I think it was Rabbi Kirsch told me, that he heard from Rav Shapiro in Israel, that why is it that the modern day Baal Tshuva phenomenon in Israel has been much more successful with the Sephardi world than with the Ashkenazi world? Particularly if you look at Rabbi Amnon Yitzhak, hundreds of thousands, if not more, have been Chozer B'Tshuva because of his speeches and many others. And the Ashkenazic outreach movements in Israel are lagging behind in terms of their successes and bringing people back into the fold. So he suggested that we found a unique phenomenon when many people moved to Israel and they immigrated in the creation of the state. Although a lot of Ashkenazic Jewry and Sephardic Jewry threw away their Judaism, we found that although the Sephardic Jewry abandoned their Judaism, there was one thing that they kept, Kedat u'Kedin, and that was Tarat HaMishpacha. And therefore this next generation were all conceived the Kedusha. So albeit they left the fold for a while, their Nitzot Neshama, their spark, wasn't as dulled as it was, unfortunately, in Ashkenazic Jewry. And therefore it was easier to reignite those embers, which is an interesting idea. But the Romans understood that a child that is born under such circumstances cannot be broken. So came along the Roman Empire and they said, Yibalu Nidot. Because if you are Boel Nidah, that weakens a Jew from its very conception. Their foundations would be shattered and then they become easier to break. So that is an interesting idea. But if we think about it, the claims that Rav Reuven ben Ishrobni makes over here in the Gemara Me'ilah were seemingly very valid. Shabbat causes a person to become poor. One day less of work. That's a very famous thing. You try and stop people working on Shabbat. What do you mean? It's my best day of business. One day less of potential income. A bris milah is a whole operation, whole thing. Weakens a person. And nida limits the amount of people to be born. So Rav Sadka says, if that's the case, it doesn't gel well with our concept that King Solomon says, Shlomo Melech, of derechei adarchenam, that the ways of the Torah are pleasant. How could they command us to do mitzvot, which according to the natural cause of events would be negative? So he explains very beautifully. We have a pasuk in Devarim, Perek Lamed, in the fourth box on your page. Re'e natati lefanecha ayom et ha'chaim et ha'tov et ha'mavet et ha'ra. See, I put before you today all these choices. Asher anochi mesevecha ayom le'avat Hashem elokecha, yevtelav Hashem your God, to go in His ways. Ve'lishmor misotav, to follow His commandments, His statutes and His laws. And then there's a three-pronged bracha, v'chayita, v'rabita, v'rachecha, Hashem elokecha, v'aretz asher ata, v'asham elishta. The three blessings that follow one another, v'chayita, v'rabita, and v'rachecha, come to answer these questions. He explains, v'chayita corresponds to mila. It's a guarantee that you will go ahead and survive, you will not become weak. V'rabita, you become many. Corresponding to the blessing, you become fruitful despite the fact that you're not allowed to be with one's wife when you're a nida. Uberachecha comes to bless you with success materially, that even on Shabbat, if you don't work, you will still have success. And therefore, Hanukkah illustrates the resolve of the Jewish commitment to Ruchniut and Kedusha. Which is why he suggests we haven't got a mitzvah on Hanukkah to fresh like on Purim. It's all Ruchani, it's not Gashmi. Yeah, so there's a famous answer that on Purim our lives were in danger, and therefore if Jews' lives were on the line, so we would say we commemorate the physical salvation via Seudat Mitzvah, which is food, which is to the body. Hanukkah, which is purely spiritual, there were no decrees made against global Jewish genocide. There was nothing like that. So he said, if that's the case, okay, very nice. But why did Chazal do us out of a good meal? You know, Jews like to eat. Okay, Shulchan Aruch says that the mitzvah may be to be marav b'vesuda, but there's no actual mitzvah per se on Hanukkah to eat. Because after all, our bodies were also in danger. If you kept mitzvot, you were killed. So he explained that this was intentional. Because Chazal were concerned that over the course of time, people would forget the main principal miracle, v'yishkach et ha'ikar. They'd forget the miracle, the main miracle, the spiritual nes, and all we'd be left with was, I guess, nes kufani in his words. We'd be left with the miracle of celebrating the body through eating and drinking. And to drill home the point that it was our loyalty, our devotion, our steadfastness and our allegiance to Torah which aided our salvation, therefore, akru achomer legamri ve'asuotu ruchani bilvad. Anything to do with the physicality, they got rid of, and they made it purely a spiritual hug. And therefore I think this is one of the most subtle lessons of Hanukkah. It's a chance to think about the charge made to us as a people to be an Am Kadosh, which is something which Torah really represents, to start the day in learning Torah, that our source of Kedusha permeates our neshamas from the very beginning of our creation, our conception till death. But there's a question that's bothered me year in, year out. And, you know, if you look at it, it doesn't make any sense. There's many answers to this question. There was many miracles that happened in Hanukkah. Alan Nissim talks about the military victory, but if you forget it, it's not such a big deal. You don't have to go back. It's not like Yalav Yavu. There's nothing outwardly done to express the military victory that occurred. Bear in mind, a couple of high priests or Kohanim who weren't necessarily military trained to go ahead out against this massive army is really quite remarkable. And yet we don't celebrate that. We celebrate and commemorate the fact that they found the oil and lit the menorah. Why is that the case? So the Meshech Chochmah explains as follows. We find a unique phenomena. We find throughout the nations of the world that many of these nations, any military victory that they had, they celebrate, they commemorate with fanfare and with pomp. But amongst the Jews, lo kem beYisrael, we don't find them. Lo yismechu al mapolet ayibehem, says Meshech Chochmah, we do not rejoice on the downfall of our enemies. Ve'lo yachogu besimcha al zeh, and we don't have a festival because of this. Why? Because the pasuk says, "Mishle bin pol yibecha al tismach." One does not rejoice, says Shlomo HaMelech, over the downfall of your enemies. Why? Pen yireh Hashem ve'ra'a b'enav ve'eshiv me'alav apol. Hashem may turn it back on your face, whatever that means. Whole separate discussion. He then goes on to explain why, therefore, on the other holidays, Pesach and Purim in particular, where the big question is, are surely we're celebrating the fact that we have the downfall of our enemies. And he shows, you can read it for yourself, in terms of the Pesukim and the Megillah, and also what happens on Pesach, that in fact we are not commemorating the military victory. We are commemorating the fact that Hashem took us out of Mitzrayim, or the fact that Hashem saved us from our enemies on Purim, but we don't commemorate the day that Haman was hanged, and he proves that from the Pesukim itself. By the same token, he explains over there, V'lachen al Nes Chanukah, en hayom more rak al hadlakat shemen zayit, v'chinuch bet Hashem, betaroto, v'ashkachat Elohim al amon b'Yisrael, bizman shelo haya navi, v'choze b'Yisrael. V'lachen nase hadlakat al inyam bilti mefursam hadlakat shemar yamin, v'echal mishum shemanhigim, etc., etc. But the principle being that we as a Jewish people do not commemorate the downfall of our enemies. Jesus, what would you say, half hollow? Sorry? Yeah, why do we say half hollow? We don't say full hollow, because Hashem said, my creations are dying. How can you say full hollow? We're happy that we cross, but you know. But if you actually look through it, he actually deals with that point as well, towards the top. Actually, in the next PC, I didn't print the whole thing out. You look it up. He deals with that question as well. Okay. So Hanukkah is meant to celebrate who we are. What we are. So after 2,000 years of dispersion and persecution, it's actually a miracle that we actually exist as a separate people. I don't know if you're aware, but for those who read the Hamodia and the other press, there was a momentous event that took place recently in Warsaw. The European Group Rabbis Conference, which I haven't attended yet, although I get invited every year. And the South African chief rabbi wrote a piece based on his experiences there. And this conference brought together, amongst others, the chief rabbis of Israel, France, Ukraine, Rome, Moscow, Austria, Dayanim from the Bat Yadinim of London, Paris, Strasbourg, Lyon, and Amsterdam. He writes, but there was one particular moment, if anyone has been to Warsaw before, been a few times, that captured the miracle, he explains, of Jewish destiny. And that was the Mincha prayers in the Neut Synagogue in Warsaw. The only synagogue that wasn't destroyed by the Germans during the war was also because they turned into a stable, for those that are aware of the history there. Any shul that was made of wood, they just burned down. But those shuls that were made of stone, they used usually as stables and defaced, but they didn't actually waste their dynamite on them. So he explains that as he began Mincha, he looked around the room and he saw 200 rabbis representing almost 2 million Jews from across the world. And the words from Tehillim of Ele Barechev, Ele Vasasim came to mind. Some with chariots, some with horses, but we call out in the name of Hashem. We brought them to their knees, but we rise up and we stand firm. I think the question that we have to ask ourselves is this, that who would have thought, if you would have told someone 65 years ago, at the height of Nazi power, when Jews were being murdered and the Noi Synagogue was desecrated, that 65 years later, rabbis representing Jewish communities across the world would return with strength and with confidence to that shul. Who would have thought that in Germany today, there is a yeshiva, there is a kollel that is using its skills to train a new cadre of rabbonim to lead the next generation in Berlin? The Third Reich brought horrific destruction to our people, but in the end it lost its war against the Jews. Because I think in defiance of any normal laws of history and any human nature, through the awesome miracles of Hashem, the Jewish people have survived. And these are indeed days of great miracle and great wonder. Rabbi Yaakov Emden wrote 250 years ago that the miracles performed by Hashem to ensure the survival of the Jewish people are even greater than all the miracles of the plagues, even greater than the splitting of the sea, even greater than the 40 years. I mean, it doesn't even greater than the fact that the man fell every single day. Because Jewish destiny defies the normal laws of history. How much time we got left? Huh?
6-7 minutes.
7 minutes. Hey. Okay. Let's see. I'm going to cut myself out. Give me a few 2 seconds just to... We were going to speak about the dreidel. Do we have time? Do we have time? A few more minutes?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, you have here at the bottom here, that I'm leaving it a large chunk out because it's short of time. On the second page towards the bottom, you have Anshin Tamei Amin Hagim, who explains the difference between why we spin a dreidel on Hanukkah and we use a graga on Purim, explaining the difference of what happened down here and happened above. Therefore, he'll one from below, one from above, and also that's expressed in the various Alanisim prayers where we say Rav Tet Rivam and Dan Tet Dinam. You can look that up in your own time. But there is perhaps a more deeper meaning based on the Bnei Yisaskar and the Maharal, that our story starts with not with the story of Hanukkah, but about 1400 years earlier with the story of Yaakov's dream. So he has a stream of the angels going up and down. The Ramban on the parasha explains that those angels represented the four kingdoms of the Golos, each one representing the future. The angels representing the future Golos of the Jewish people: Babel, Paros, Mada, Yavan, and Edom. And first he saw the Malach of Babel go up 70 steps, the Ramban says, and then came down. And then he saw the one of Paros go up 52 and then come down, which was the... And then the Greek one went up for 180 years and came down. Finally, the protecting angel of Rome went up. The Rau, Sar, Malchut, Edom, Olev, and Yored, it didn't come down. And that point became very fair, very very scared. And Ramam goes on to explain. Hashem said to him that even from there, we'll take you down. He quoted Pasuk in Yeshaya. For those who want to look it up, Perikav Chet, Pasuk Yudbet, and the Ramban. The four kingdoms of Babel, Paras, Mada, Yavan, and Edom, it's very interesting if we look through history that the first of the Beis Hamikdash was raised to the ground by Nebuchadnezzar, and the majority of the Jewish people were led then into Galus by Sancheiriv. So why was it such a tragedy that it was destroyed? So the Beis Hamikdash represented that unique sinor, that unique pipeline between Hashem and man. When it was destroyed, that energy was severed. That level of connection we had with between us and Hashem was represented by the nefesh, the soul, which was the nun. The nefesh, ki takiv kova, min kan Hashem. The nefesh begins with the letter nun, represents the kingdom of Babel. Paras u'madai, as we know from the story of Purim, Haman was interested only in the final solution of the Jewish people, and the entire Jewish people were at risk, and that was the guf of the Jewish people, represented by the gimel. So Paras u'madai is represented of gimel. Yavan, on the other hand, Ben Yisaskar and Maral explain that their aim was to create a new generation of Hellenist thinking people that were into drama and the superficial wisdoms that they professed. And the way they did that was to destroy and corrupt the sechel of the Jewish people, which is Shin. Edom is really a conglomerate, very, very briefly, a summation of all the others together. And at the beginning of the domination, the Romans, like the Babylonians, stopped the Korbanos in the temple. Then when they destroyed the Beis HaMikdash, they inflicted unthinkable carnage on the goof of the Jewish people. For those who have learned Josephus, he claims there was approximately 1.2 million that were killed during that particular siege. And then at the massacre of Beitar, for those of you who learned the Gemara in Gittin, we know that the blood went into the sea and it didn't require fertilization for 7 years. So essentially it's all four encapsulated into one, and that's Hakol, he says with the hay. So therefore, If I were to ask you the question, how do you define the center of a circle? It's very difficult to define, and yet it exists. So if I understood the Bnei Yisrael correctly, just like the letter Yud in the Hebrew alphabet, a single dot from which the universe was created, the very threshold of existence, that still point in the turning circle, around that the dot, the whole world turns around, the Jewish people are that little dot. So infinitesimally small, if there's such a word, and yet around this dot the world turns. What is opposite to that dot? What is opposite to that dot is the central point that occupies no space. The directions of north, south, east and west. Expansion in four directions, four being the antithesis to one. Four is the number of the four kingdoms who stand eternally opposed to the Jewish people. And perhaps as history dictated, eternally opposed to the one who is one. So the dreidel spins, but what do we see? We see the four sides spinning around the central point that occupies no space. And when those sides spin, they themselves cease to have no direction. And now in the blur of their whirling, they are a circle reflection of the small point in the center. What is carved on those four sides? The Nun, the Gimel, the Shin and He. On the surface we know it stands for Neskador HaYasham. A great miracle happened there. But on a more deeper level, the dreidel is a microcosmic representation of the four kingdoms. And the hand that spins the dreidel, as we saw now in the time of Mehagim, is the hand that comes from above. So every empire thinks it's going to last forever, but the hand that spins only spins the dreidel history for a predetermined allotted amount of time, and then each and every empire will fall on its axes. And therefore, he says that Nun Gimel Hei Shin is the gematria of Mashiach, which should come at Bimheira Bi'Aminu Amin.